Hello and welcome to our 17th episode of the Gutenberg Changelog podcast. In today's episode, we will talk about the latest Gutenberg plugin release 13.7, more template creation enhancements, full site editing, themes in WooCommerce, and a lot more. I'm Birgit Pauli Hart, curator at the Gutenberg Times and WordPress developer advocate, and I'm here with my co-host, Mary Job, WordPress community organizer at wpafrica.org. and support engineer at Paid Membership Pro. So glad you're here again with me, Mary. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing very okay. Thank you, Birgit. I'm also looking forward to my first WordCamp post-COVID. I believe this is also a good time to mention that a call for speakers for WordCamp Ginger is out. So if you're interested, look forward to meeting you there. Please apply to speak. WordCamp Ginger will take place on the 2nd and 3rd of September 2022.
All right. Well, thank you. And I'm also so happy to welcome from Canada, core team contributor and Twitch streamer, Ryan Welcher. He's on the second time on the show. So how are you today, Ryan? Thanks for joining us.
I'm great, Birgit. Thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure. It was a great time last time, and I'm looking forward to diving into all the new features.
All right. Excellent. You just finished this week's live stream on Twitch. How did it go and what did you talk about?
It went well. It was sort of a smattering of topics. I have been working on a lot of documentation around some data store stuff, and I learned something new about use select, which is a hook that we use to retrieve data from Gutenberg and from the data stores. And I kind of poked around it into Gutenberg 13.7 a little bit, but we kind of ad hoc jumped into this concept of one block being able to refer to another block to get its attributes and talking together and having them update and everything. And that was a lot of fun, but it's pretty in the weeds as far as working with blocks go. But
So. Right. Well, that sounds really interesting. So
yeah, that's fun.
Excellent. So, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was going to say that sounds like a lot of fun. Welcome again, Ryan, and thank you for joining us on the second episode. Second time here.
Glad to be here. Very, very much so. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's get this show on the road. We have a couple of announcements. First up, I'm glad to announce that pattern previews are now available in the team directory. Now, the Meta team has released the beta version of this new feature in the team directory. What this does is it allows you to see the patterns that are available within a team. The patterns are displayed as thumbnails on the team's page, and when you click on them, you can see a larger version, which is what you would also see when you click on a page on your website. This is the first iteration, and in the release post on the Meta team blog, Steven Dufresne has asked for feedback. So if you're testing this and you see something that is not working right, please, please do give them a feedback so that they can improve more on this future. Do you have any thoughts on this, Ryan or Birgit?
Well, I find it's really fantastic that it's out there. And yeah, because the patterns I suspect that patterns will become so much more important in WordPress than they are now. And this is another example of how patterns will get a much bigger exposure.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Still on announcements. Next up, there is a call for comments on a feature plugin for notifications. I'm actually excited about this one. I don't know if I have OCD or something, but it freaks me out when I enter into a WordPress site and I'm seeing all these notifications here and there. I'm just clicking X and X, and then I come back and I see them. It's really upsetting. So actually, this is not blog or editor related, but the group of contributors working on this revamp for the API for the WP admin notices just published this in their current approach. So the problem this seeks to address is actually simple. Imagine you log into your WordPress site. You haven't been there for weeks. And the moment you do, you're bombarded with update notifications, premium plugin advertisements. I think the one that gets me is the premium plugin advertisements that come on the main dashboard instead of on the plugin itself dashboard. I mean, when I see it, I'm like, what are you doing here? So this is what the team around the WP notification project tries to change. Quoting from the post by Brian Kurtz, it says, this project is focused on building a new framework for notifications from the ground up and potentially providing a tool that encourages consistency in presentation, follows best practices in standards and accessibility, and discourages spammy or disruptive interactions in the WordPress admin screen. Do you have thoughts on this, Ryan?
I love it. I love the idea of it. I know it's the bane of most site owners' existence to deal with every plugin handles notifications differently. I mean, when people are left to sort of roll their own solution to a problem, then we get 100,000 different solutions. So having something that's like standard and you know, it's thoughtful and built from the ground up is going to be great. Cause I just think we can, you know, well, even the most obtrusive notifications with a system like that will still not be that obtrusive and not be that glaring. It won't be bright orange or whatever it is, and, you know, all those sort of, you know, horrible UX decisions that get made. Yeah, I just think I don't think there's anything really bad that can come out of a proposal like this, in my opinion.
Especially
yeah.
After
I agree with you.
Sorry, I agree totally. I agree totally. After 19 years, I think it would be really, it's good to have a team looking at it. And the team has been working on this for a few years now, on and off, because some of us have life outside of WordPress. But I'm glad they got to the next step in showing the world what they're up to. And that is always good, because now feedback comes in, especially also for the plugin developers, because admin notices are important, but what are the importance of this, and how would you work it if you're a plugin developer as well? So,
awesome. I look forward to testing it and giving a feedback on my own feedback on how it works. So, okay. So, moving forward to our section on community contributions. First up, I'm happy to let you know that the first block themes are now available in the WooCommerce marketplace. This is exciting. So if you're building WooCommerce stores, Bonum by Teams Kingdom was the first. This particular one favors a great set of patterns for all kinds of sellers. The second one also just landed, and it's called Basti by Anna Segutta of Anero Design. As always, this one shows off a beautiful design, and it has great attention to detail. It also provides wonderful patterns and also some great style variations for your buttons, columns, and other blocks. It also has some great overall style variations that would let you change the character of the theme. On installation, you would find a set of four design variations depending on the nature of your business. Jamie Masland did a review of this particular theme. So if you're building WooCommerce sites often, you should also take a look and explore this block themes.
Jamie Marsland did a review, an 8-minute review of it, and really did a deep dive into it. And I was always wondering, with the block themes, what would make a theme the value that what would I pay for when I buy a theme that is full set editing? And it's definitely the style variations for my buttons or for every block. And it's also the style variations for the global styles. And of course, the nature of the button, the patterns, and how they fit in into the versatility of the theme. So I think this is very well, both themes, the Basti theme as well as the Bonum theme in the WooCommerce marketplace, it pretty much says it all in the marketplace announced. There are free themes in there, but those two are not free themes. They're both premium themes. Just to do a little caveat there. All right. So that brings us to our what's released section. And we released yesterday, or the Gutenberg team released yesterday on Wednesday 20th, the Gutenberg 13.7. Gutenberg 13.7 brings an updated modal design. And we talk about the features later. So this release comes 167 PRs. With 58 contributors, including 4 first-time contributors. So excellent. Kudos to all the contributors who helped with the release. Go ahead.
Sorry, Birgit. I just want to say that it's been fairly recently, I think, in the release post that we've been specifically calling out first-time contributors. I think like it's probably like, you know, not that recent, but I think that's phenomenal. Like, I know when I was first trying to get, you know, my first core props, my first, like, you know, it was very, you know, it's just such a win. You feel it's such a huge win and you feel so good. And it's great that people are calling that they're getting mentioned like every 2 weeks, as opposed to every 6 months when the next, or 3 months, I guess, when the next version of WordPress comes out. I just think it's great. It's such a good way of like thanking people that are putting in their time to get this done. Anyways, sorry, continue.
If you want to know who the new contributors are, check out the release post, because they're on the lower end, after the changelog, you'll see who they are and what did they contribute. So you can see also, is it something that you would want to do, or just thank them personally when you know them or when you see them in Slack. So there are a few enhancements in that release. One is the update of the modal design. And it's subtle, but it's very, very helpful, because it provides you focus on what you might want to accomplish, because it blurs the background. It kind of comes up on top of the page and then blurs the background a little bit. It also reduces visual noise in the corners. So it's definitely a quality of life enhancements, as we call it, but it's definitely something that will replicate through all the modals. So it's the preferences, it's the keyboard shortcut, or any other modal that's kind of in use. For the theme developers, the next one is, you will really find that helpful, but now there's text decoration support for the post title block, which was still missing, especially when you do for query blocks or something like that. And then there's also now a change in the media placeholder. Now, if you use an image block or a cover block in a post, you can actually say you want to use the featured image, so you don't have to reload it up again into the post if it's a featured image, and if your theme doesn't show it already with your single post. And in the query blocks, you now can use them in your templates, and you just have one click where you can select the featured image. You could do it before, but you had to click twice in the toolbar to actually make it attach the featured image to that block. Yeah, Mary, Ryan, if you have anything, feel free to comment.
I think that kind of change, just to make it easier to do something, like, you know, two clicks doesn't seem like a lot, but if you're building out hundreds of pages, two clicks ends up being a lot of time, right? So, you know, being able to reduce even down one click is nice. I think it's great.
Yeah. It's half the time, right? And it's not always two clicks. It's also that you have to move the mouse to find the click. Yeah. So exactly. Now that is all much nicer. A similar redesign was made also for the document settings. That's on the sidebar, not the block settings, but the post settings, for post or page settings for the page across the post types. So in the previous releases, the post settings panel in the sidebar was already redesigned. And in this release, it all becomes a little bit more refined. So the fields for post format, slug, template, and authors are now aligned, and they all have the same width. And then the template displays the default template, string instead of none. So it opens up the drop-down box to select a new one or edit the existing one. Also, the permalink opens now if you want to change it into a popover to edit it. And it's a much nicer experience than trying to fit it into the small screen there when you want to re-edit the slug. So the result is cleaner, it's more organized, and should help to readily access the important information about the post and page at a glance.
I'm just going to say, again, these kind of changes just make, they're all quality of life changes, right? Like, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really matter to your website if all those things align, but it's, you know, some visual dissonance and stuff like that. So yeah, it's nice to be able to to refine these things as we move forward, as the project moves forward.
Totally agree. And when you look at the release post, and there is the design team put two images together, and the WordPress.org site has a compare block where you can have before and after pictures, and then you have a slider in the middle of it, and you can slide along. that's in there. But for this one, you just see the two sidebars next to each other. And it's so weird. Yeah, I've never noticed how this jointed it actually was before than it is. And now that it's in order, yeah, it's so much nicer to look at. Yeah, and now we come to the bigger feature. The biggest feature that's actually in the release is that you now can create templates for all kind of different post types, different taxonomies, specific terms, specific categories on tags for authors. You can even create a custom general template. So when you add or edit a template for custom post types and taxonomies, you can do it for a single post. So you get a list of all the for the single custom post type pages that you can select and then edit or create a new one if your theme hasn't provided them, because you just created your own custom post type with a plugin or something like that. You see it in the add new template for it. So that's pretty cool. So you can, for instance, have a different template on your personal, on your blog. You can have it for personal blogs, blog post. You have a different template than for a developer related blog post, or a third one for travel posts. So you can do a lot more creativity here. There's already, and if you have custom post types, as I said, it's already automatically in there. I already got a question on Twitter after I tweeted out the new features or about the new plugin. And there was a question, so how do I get an archive post type? So is there an archive for my books? Yeah, if a post type is books, can I have a archive? You can, but not with the template engine yet. You can certainly do a new page and pull in the query block, which already covers the custom blocks, custom post types. But that is the only template that has not been yet created. It's in the works, but I saw the tracking issue for all the different templates that developers want to create. And that one is the only one that doesn't have a checkbox. So it was pretty interesting. So I think that's pretty big, because without access. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. I mean, I get that for theme developers or anyone really who's building block themes. This is massive, because one of the things that I've heard is like when it first came out, we can't create the theme templating system that WordPress has had since, I don't know, version one on the PHP side, it in the full site editing experience until now, basically, right? Like, so it's huge, because there are so many times where just having that specific template that you want to have for a very specific thing meant that you had to go and create a new, you know, file in your theme, upload that to your server or whatever, and then you could work with it. But now, I mean, it's going to put a bunch of developers out of work. I mean, it's not, I'm kidding, but a lot of that is now completely in the hands of the admin, which is great.
Right. And yeah, for those who design themes, it's definitely, you don't need to have access to the file system anymore. Yeah. And you don't need to know about the template hierarchy that WordPress has. Yeah, because it kind of gives you a clear jumping point on for the next blog template that you want to create. So it definitely expands the reach of the creativity or template editing beyond just the developer. Yeah, I really love that. So the next step for that would be custom fields, right? How to surface custom fields and custom post templates. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what will be next for WordPress and the blog editor.
I don't know if this is in the works, but I just recently built a site for a friend of mine, and there was a lot of, it'd be great if you could create a template that was inherited from an existing template. If that, you know, maybe there's a way of doing it. I haven't really dove into it that far, but that I can see that being something that people want to do. Like, I create a new template for a very specific tag. I don't want to have to go and set my header and my footer again. Like, I just want to inherit that from whatever, from a template. So if anyone's listening,
yeah,
that's what you should do.
And it's like geniuses all look kind of think alike. So there is actually an issue in the GitHub repo, or at least it's talked about, that those templates shouldn't start from scratch on a blank page. They should have some default be it the header and footer in there. So it kind of starts out like a page on my site and not so much, okay, what is missing here? Yeah, kind of thing. Because the surprise would be that if it's a white blank page and you just put the things in that you want, it won't have a header and footer by now, but that is definitely in the works. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Which I think would be great. Because I think it's the path of least resistance is where like 90% of the people are like, that's 90% of the use cases. I just want a new tag template. So I don't want to have to go and reset up my whole page. If I want all that, then I probably wouldn't have any problem saying, you know, copy this template and then changing the things that I need, as opposed to like brand new template. And then I got to rebuild all the things and maybe I have to match settings, you know, and stuff. Anyways, sounds like it's definitely on the radar. So this is awesome.
It is, I don't know how the implementation will look, but there's definitely, watch the GitHub space. Dear listeners, if you want to do some input, there's always great discussions on GitHub on how to approach a feature like that hasn't been done before. And that's actually the beauty of community, that more people have better ideas and it comes out a better product. All right, another quality of life, so to speak, or a start of a new feature is in the information panel on the editor, that's the little eye in a circle. Now you also has received a new number, and that's the estimated time to read in the table of contents in the editor. So next to the numbers of words and characters and numbers of blocks, numbers of headings, numbers of paragraphs, the sixth one is now estimated time to read for whatever this asset is. And I really like that because then you can kind of gauge, am I too long now? Or do I need to put a TLDR on top of it because it's now longer than 2 minutes or something like that? Yeah, you can kind of build your own rules around this. Not rules, but kind of think about your own rules there.
A little caveat. You can also copy that instead of using a plugin, adding a plugin to your site to do that. You can just copy and put estimated reading time at the top of all your posts.
Yeah, of course, it would also be better. So it's only displayed in the editor right now and cannot be used on the front end without additional feature. But I put in a feature request for a new post time to read block on GitHub. So if you chime in if you want to, and kind of have it bubble up. It would be one of the new blocks for posts and that you can use in a query block or even on a single post block, a post template. Yeah. So that's kind of for the enhancements. Well, quite a few. They're not the big swings, but they are apart from the huge amount of templates that you can create now.
There's one that skipped over from Full Site Editing, Birgit, that I just wanted to call out.
Please.
Apply to the block locking that applies to inner blocks.
Yes.
I think that's fantastic. So was it 5.9 that released that block locking came out, or was it 6.0? I can't remember, but the ability to go in and lock a block, and now you can apply that to any of its children blocks, which I think it's a huge quality of life thing, which is so nice. Because that's a lot of work, especially if you have nested blocks and nested blocks and nested blocks. You have to go into every single one and mark them and lock them, which is great.
Yeah. Now you have just a little toggle switch on the bottom of the modal, and where you say apply to all blocks in this container.
Great. So that could extend to patterns, which would be great because you could probably have your patterns start out as locked, and there's a lot of options here. Block locking is a really powerful tool, especially when you get into user-based block locking, where as an administrator, I have access to all the blocks, but as say an editor, I can't move two or three of those blocks. Or when you get into that level of editorial control, especially across a team, it gets super, super powerful.
Yeah, and we will later on also talk a little bit about the new handbook page about that. Yeah, so bug fixes. Oh, we had one new API, which I find quite interesting. So from my perspective, it's the JavaScript error tracking, and it allows the custom error reporting logic to be called. And then the error boundary is kind of, it kind of bubbles up to the front end or to wherever you want it, but it is not suppressed by the block editor. So it's definitely very helpful when you're debugging things. Do you know anything more about that? or any comments?
Yeah, I think it's super powerful. I think one thing that as a block developer, errors are problematic because they're hard to track. They're hard to track down. So if you've ever seen the sort of like, you know, cannot display block and an error occurred, that's the error boundary. So basically the way the React works is it's wrapping every error and it catches it all and says an error happened. So what this API allows you to do is when that error happens, you can actually do something with that error message. So one of the examples in the pull request is if you were going to like Sentry.io, I think it is, it's like it's an error logging tool, right? So if you had a block that was say hitting an API that you wrote or whatever, and you wanted to log errors back to Sentry to be able to see what happened, this enables that. This allows you to do really complicated things. Or even if you just wanted to say fire a notice and say, hey, you didn't input your API key, that's why this failed. That helps to give your user a better indication of why their block failed. Now, hopefully you shouldn't be having a block fail in you know, the wild sort of thing. But sometimes, you know, we need certain things to be in place before these blocks will work. But I think it's the beginning of a lot more developer experience style of quality of life changes, things that allow the developers building these blocks to be able to handle things more gracefully, specifically errors, especially, yeah. So I don't know, I think it's really, really cool. It's super interesting to me, but I'm a big developer nerd. So, yeah. So I think it's, I don't know a lot of use cases for it right now, but I can definitely see it growing in, you know, as it matures, it'll be more and more useful.
Well, there were quite a few bug fixes coming out of it, but I think that there was none that actually jumped out at me and said, oh, thank God it's fixed now kind of thing. But of course it's also, yeah, it's every personal experience is a little bit different, but we come to the documentation settings. And Ryan, you have done quite some work there to enhance or make the documentation better through the generation tool.
Yeah. So I've been, it's always been a bit of a pet peeve of mine that like the block editor handbook has got a lot of in information and it's great. And it's all generated dynamically directly from the Gutenberg repository, but there's not a lot of code examples. And specifically in the data store realm, there's a lot of like, you can see what is available to you, but using it is sometimes a lot more complicated than just say making a call to a function. So part of what I've been working on is the ability to, well, adding all examples for as many packages as I can. So we have examples now for the get notices package. So you can use those. The other part that I'm working on is removing things from the documentation that probably shouldn't be there for an end user. So for example, this is a bit in the weeds, but when you're dealing with data stores, specifically Redux-based data stores, which is what Gutenberg is basing its data stores on, you have these functions called actions, and some are only dispatched or run internally to the store. So the store says, get me a thing, and then that thing gets returned, and then the store internally says, oh, I've got that thing, now I can do something else with it. So those actions aren't ever going to be used by a developer using a public API. So one of the things that I've been working on is adding a support for a doc block tag that will basically exclude things from the documentation. And so that's a big win, I think, for us, because it's already complicated and, you know, the functions don't really explain what they do and they shouldn't be used at all, because you would never call them. It wouldn't make any sense. And if you did call them, it'd probably just break the data store. So that's what. And so another thing that I've been working on is, actually, I guess that's it. The ignore stuff, getting examples in. I just literally merged like half an hour ago, a PR that gets rid of all of the internal actions for the data package, which is great. So it's going to reduce the amount of documentation, but make it more more concise. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but that's that, this, it's a long process. There's like 10 packages and there's a lot of selectors and actions that I have to document. So it's so if anyone wants to help, there's a tracking ticket in Gutenberg for all of our all of our sections. Yeah.
I'll find that for you and we'll share the tracking link, tracking issue link in the show notes so you can jump on board. It could also be quite interesting too, because that gets you a little bit into the weeds, but not deep enough.
I will tell you this, you will know the package inside out and back in backwards, because you have to write documents, you have to write examples that work. So you have to figure out how they work, and then you have to figure out a real reason to use it. So I know lots about this now, way more than I ever thought I would. But
excellent.
So it's a great way to get right into the API.
So I wanted to also, so thank you for doing that, picking up on that and going through with it. What I also found on the documentation, how it's also part of the documentation revamp, or more people looking at documentation from a point of developer experience, or is that we might reorganize things. So having a different header or a different path to a certain document, or even the document URLs changes. But we need to have a redirect complete directly attached to it. So we can say, okay, this old page now needs to redirect to the new page, so we don't lose people that have been in that documentation for a long time. And I connected with the META team and figure out how can this be done on the Gutenberg manifest.json repo to also add the redirect later on. So when the importer into the WordPress.org pages, then also can take care of those redirects directly and not have a second step to it.
I think that's great. I think that's going to allow us the royal us, is that a thing, to be more fluid with the docs, because I know that's been, our docs, if you look at some of these pages, they're massive, they're just super long, and there's that zero to expert problem that we sort of have in the documentation realm, where here's a basic example and now here's all the information you'll ever need to know about it ever. And it's all kind of on the same page. And so by being able to be more dynamic with how often we change pages and we can set redirects and things, it'll allow us to kind of play with the documentation format. And maybe we can play a bit more fast and loose with it and try things. And it's not a huge undertaking, and people don't lose all their bookmarks, and it's bad times. So I think it's great being able to do that.
Yeah. So, and I wanted to bring it back to what you talked about before, the locking experience there is a new page in the developer block editor developer handbook, and that is called Curating the Editor Experience, and you'll find it under the how-to guides. And it talks about the locking API, what the user can do and how you can suppress that, how you lock patterns or templates, how you can set the permissions, change the permissions to the control locking ability with code examples, very well done, and providing default controls and options in the theme JSON file, and how to find how to work that, and then also to limit the interface options to the theme JSON. That's the global styles kind of on the right-hand side. You don't not necessarily want somebody to use the custom color or to use the custom duotone links because you want to stay on color, on design color, on brand color, all that. There was a make blog post about it, but now it's in the handbook, and if I look through it, I find it really comprehensive. So, and it has some nice section headers, so, and additional resources that are also on the Learn. So there is one video on the WordPress.v from the Learn WordPress space. It's working with templates and full set editing. And so that's a great page, and that is new. And I love that it's now all in one place and not distributed over the whole WordPress universe, because somebody found something and shared it. But then, I can do that, but I also want to lock down this. So now you have it all on one page.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. There are a few experiments that are called globally the Style Engine. And there were some updates there. I will share the Style Engine tracking issue. And there's also a layout, block layout tracking issue for that. So you can stay up to date in what it's all about. It's pretty much how styles are treated from theme to block to elements and back again in terms of how you can change things. Yeah, because you for some of the things you have UI and for some of them it's only in theme JSON. Some of them you need to still do with CSS. So there's quite a big work to be done to standardize that. I think that's it. Do you have anything else that you... Oh, yeah. That was the first idea that I had when I thought about getting Ryan on the show. There's a section of the section in the create block about the create block script. And that is that you get a prompt for minimum system requirements if they are not met. And also careful prompts to how to continue with that. And it also fixes a regression from the size... underscore size refactoring. So great block. Ryan, you have done quite a few demos and quite a few, quite some work on it. What does it do for those who haven't heard about it?
It's my favorite package in all of WordPress, first of all. It's what and it does.
Now
is,
we get into the second hour of our podcast. Sorry, I just needed to easy a bit.
Do you have a minute? Do you have an hour and a half?
I have a minute.
Okay, sit down. Let me tell you about create block. It is basically the TLDR is that it is a tool that allows you to quickly scaffold blocks. So it will create a plugin and it will create for you a block, a scaffolded simple block that you can then do whatever you want with. So it's very, very powerful. It can accept custom templates. You can write your own templates and publish them to NPM. You can use local templates. So if you have a very specific way that you like to build your blocks, or you work for an agency and you have your agency's got a very specific way, you can create a template and have the create block package just refer to that template and it'll build blocks out for you however you like. It's super powerful. So the two pull requests that are in there around prompting. There are some edge cases when it comes to, I think it's Linux and maybe a bit of Windows, that we were getting some false positives when you run create block. What it does behind the scenes is it checks to make sure you have the right version of Node, the right version of all these things installed. And sometimes, depending on the platform, it would say that's not right, you're missing it, whatever, and it would just stop. So you couldn't use it. So what this is allowing you to do is it'll say, hey, I don't think you've got the right things. Do you want to still go? And if you know that you do indeed have everything that you need, you can continue the process. It makes it a lot easier because it's a huge blocker for someone that's not maybe working on, you know, the most sort of standard system setup, that they can't use this tool, even though they know they've got it set up the way they want it and that it's set up correctly and it will work, that the tool fails. So that's what this is all about, just allowing us, it just drives adoption and just allows more people to use the tool. The last one, the fixing the regression from size, there was a internal effort to move away from Lodash, I believe. And
Lodash,
so, so underscore.size is a Lodash function. So this, it was moved away from using Lodash, but then they found that there was a regression. So they fixed it and that's all that was. But
there is actually a huge effort to move away from Lodash for performance reasons. And if you count in the changelog all the PRs together that are listed, you will not get to 167. You will only get to 120 or 30, because there were about 40 different PRs that touched quite a few files to move away from Lodash.
Yeah. Which I think makes sense. I mean, if we don't need it, I don't know if Lodash, I don't know which, there's a Lodash that sort of like allows tree shaking and one that does not. And I don't know which one we're using. And so it leads to large bundle sizes and all sorts of bad times in the JavaScript world.
Yeah. So. And I wanted to, create block is also my favorite tool. And I just wanted to add, many people tried it out before and they were only kind of fixated on single blocks. But now you can have, I don't know if that's already implemented. I know you were working on it to allow for multi-blocks.
Multi-blocks, yep. So that is actually built into the scripts package. So you don't need to have a special template. And so originally, you needed to have a special template and a special Webpack file that would allow you to build a multiple blocks using a single build process. So myself and Greg, who's an alumni of Gutenberg, Changelog, we worked really hard on working on scripts in CrateBlock to allow scripts by default to handle multiple blocks. It wasn't just us. There was a lot of people and Greg did all the heavy lifting. I'm just taking credit for it. But so now if you structure your setup in a certain way, basically putting a block.json file inside of a directory, inside of your source directory, the scripts package will see it and it will generate multiple, it will create a block for each one of those that it finds. So we don't need anything custom to do that. What we are doing with CrateBlock, and this is hopefully going to get in soon, is we are trying to make it so you can just scaffold a block. So when you run CrateBlock now, it will scaffold an entire plugin and then put a block inside that plugin. What we want to be able to do is have it scaffold the plugin, and then if you run it a second time with a flag, it'll only just add another plugin to your existing one. And that's something that's going to add a lot of power to it.
All right.
And we're sort of working on that now. And we're also working on the ability to, but anyways, we could do a whole nother podcast on this. So I'll stop, but
maybe
there's a
should.
Lot of cool. Yes. There's a lot of really cool things coming mm-hmm. for both scripts and CrateBlock.
I also know there is a flag that you can set when you create it that it's going to be a dynamic block.
That's not merged yet, but that is the other one too, because we are working on making that as simple as possible. There has been talk of, instead of it being dynamic block, it would be like --- variation, and then you can tell it's static or dynamic, or if there's another type that gets introduced along the way, we can do that as well. So we're still working on that. It's definitely something that we want to, that I don't think anyone's going to say no to. It's just a matter of making sure that we get it right before it launches, because it's really hard to change something after it's out in the world. So there's a few things that Greg and I have been working on that I think is going to hopefully make CrateBlock like the de facto package for building blocks.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's my pitch. That's my elevator pitch. So
very good. And this was a great segue into our what's in active development were discussed. And one is that I mentioned about documentation be restructuring, and we mentioned Craig. So Jagosh has gone in and has looked at the hooks references for the block editor and found that the documentation is using the term hook filters differently than the rest of the WordPress documentation, because there are hooks with actions and filters, not just filters. So he wanted to restructure the reference for that. And he has. The only thing, he hasn't changed the name and the titles yet. He has changed the page title, but not the slugs, because we discovered we needed a redirect thing. So this was merged, but it's in the handbook now, but the slug does not match the title of the page, which is sometimes a little unfortunate, but that's definitely updated. It will come in. It's already in the handbook, because the handbook updates are not tied to the release. Yeah, nope. They're listed in the release notes just to have them, give them a place, but they are pretty much as soon as the PR is merged into Gutenberg, within 15 minutes, the documentation page is updated. So that's actually a great process here.
Mm-hmm. It's great, but it can also be a little bit, and this is probably something that we can talk about, but because it's built from Trunk, Trunk is the bleeding edge of everything that's in Gutenberg. So sometimes things end up in documentations that aren't released in core and aren't released in any plugin versions. And that there's no sort of simple way right now of indicating that, which mm-hmm. is,
yeah.
But it is awesome that when documentation gets up, like I merged my pull request just before we started and it's already live. Mm-hmm. The doc changes are already there, and that's great. Mm-hmm. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, keep in mind it's not version controlled, it's just the bleeding edge. And it also doesn't disseminate between what's in WordPress and what's just in the available in plugin and future WordPress. So it's sometimes one need to kind of read it a little bit carefully. especially when you are like an early adopter of things and love that life on the bleeding edge. Yeah, sometimes it gets you there. Leading edge, not that. Yeah. Another thing that's in the works is, and a lot of people definitely have been waiting for it, it's the fluid typography. So the first iteration is already merged and will come to 13.8. The experiment is still experimental, but for theme developers only in theme.json to have the settings for the fluid typography. So they set minimum and maximum sizes for the font, and then it automatically expands and expands and contracts. The other one word?
Contracts.
Well, yeah, not a D. It was a long, wrong. Yeah. And and if all is good, you can test it with the Gutenberg Nightly already, or you wait for the Gutenberg 13.8 coming out on August 3rd. Dave Smith, who was a guest here on episode 68, he's working on experimenting with a feature to actually attach custom labeling to blocks in the list view. So, and that has come up quite repeatedly in the call for testing on the FSE program and also in the user testing, that when you have more complex, more group blocks in your page, that it's hard to kind of find the one that you actually want to work on. And because they're all called group blocks, and you have six or seven of them or three of them, you hit them and say, no, that's not it, that's not it. But if you can give them a name, then you can identify them. The same is with the heading, with headings or even with paragraphs. Yeah, you can kind of each of them. It's not merged yet. It's a PR that you can, and I link it in the show notes, that you can maybe even test out there. And it just gives you, you click into the block row where the block is mentioned, and then it opens up an editing field that you can write in there. So it's really cool.
I think it's very cool. First of all, it's something that's needed to be able to have, like if you're in the list view and you've got 20 blocks, and you know, it's hard to know what's what. But a side effect of this, which is something that actually just came up in my live stream today, we were trying to have one block refer to another block and get its attributes, and then do something with those attributes in the first block. And the issue that we were running into was there's no unique identifier for blocks that are persistent. So they're in the bowels of the code. There is a client ID that you can get access to, but that client ID is refreshed every page load. So having something like this, a really cool side effect is that now we've got a unique identifier for a block. So you can give it the block a name, and then that, because in the implementation, I believe they're saving it as a block attribute. So it gets saved with the block. So now other blocks can get that block by getting the list of blocks and filtering by that attribute for the thing that they want. So I think that this is a perfect case of like, we built for one thing, but now there's like a whole nother use case that people can really use it for. And I'm super excited about that. So
it would be helpful to keep that in mind when the first iteration comes out. Yeah, how that can be used in plugins or in
I've already left a comment on the PRs. Yeah, it's so powerful. It's grip the devs too.
Yeah, but it's user control. So the plugin doesn't know what the user is going to do. So
that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, in the use case that I'm talking about, it's sort of you would need to have that user level to connect those two things anyways, but it solves the development problem of how do I make a connection between two blocks when I have no unique identifier anywhere to save as a reference. You know, there's no block ID that's persistent. Mm-hmm. It's always new every page load, but this could potentially solve a problem like that. I mean, there's edge cases around the same name. What do you do with the same name? But that sort of stuff. That's very cool, though.
So it's not, because it's experimental and it's relatively new, we don't know when it's going to be merged or when it's coming to the Gutenberg Nightly, but that's kind of that, a little PR. Leading edge. I need to kind of get the bleeding out of it. and that is pretty much the end of our changelog today. So Mary and Ryan, is there anything that you want the community to know or remind them of before we end the show, so they can kind of look out for it or see you or
Well, I'm going to shamelessly self-promote. You can watch me every Thursday at 10:30 Eastern on Twitch. My handle is Ryan Welcher Codes. I've also got the YouTube channel with the same name, Ryan Welcher Codes. So anything that on my stream that's anything that's decent, I usually put on YouTube. And we do all kinds of coding stuff, but usually block related. So that's my shameless self-promotion. So
yeah, super. We'll put, of course, the links in the show notes. Mary?
Well, on my end, I'm good. I like what Ryan did. You know what they say? They say if you don't promote yourself, nobody's going to do it for you.
And awesome. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So, and before we end the show, I just wanted to remind you, dear listener, that if you like the Changelog podcast and write us a review either on Stitcher or on Apple or on Google, it helps us promote it and kind of get more people interested in it. And they know that it's around. And then, as always, the show notes will be published on gutenbergtimes.com/podcast. This is episode 70. And if you have questions, suggestions, or news you want us to talk about, send them to changelog@gutenbergtimes.com. That's the email address at changelog@gutenbergtimes.com. Or you can always ping me on Twitter, BPH or Gutenberg Times. All the DMs are open, so I'll also look at them. So, well, a huge thank you to Ryan to join us today for this hour and bring so much new, interesting stuff there. Thank you so much, Mary. It was great to see you again and talk to you. And I'll see you next time in 2 weeks.
Thank you, too.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun.